I'm Ellie Sturton, the host of The Kingston Curator, and every Friday, 3 p.m., you can join me for all things arts. Tune in to hear interviews with local artists, authors, musicians, and more. I talk about the latest arts news and upcoming events. You won't want to miss it. Today, I'm going to start by giving you a brief rundown of what's happening around town this weekend, and then we'll get into some interviews. Today, I had the pleasure of chatting with Emma McGregor Mitchell from the Tet Center and some various artists, directors, and executives from the Kingston Canadian Film Festival. All right, so coming up are your live music events happening around
Those
town
were the events
this
and
weekend.
Concerts
that folks
On
can
Friday,
look forward to.
On Friday,
Time Out
Bar and Bistro hosts Riley Merrigan playing Country and Roots at 3 p.m., followed by Kingston's own Purple Diamonds at 6 p.m.
In Springer Market Square, catch Kickin' It Country, featuring Whiskey Smoke live from 7 to 8, playing country tunes. You can see The Salt Cellars at Hotel Wolf Island from 7 to 9 p.m. They're a folk Americana duo that blends blues and jazz. At Musiki Cafe, the Dave Barton Trio plays smooth jazz from 8 to 11 p.m. Or head to Tiernan Oak for the Celtic Kitchen Party, starting at 9 p.m., with a lively night of Irish, Scottish, and East Coast-inspired tunes. And later, Jelly Train takes the stage at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m., with funk, blues rock, and soulful tunes. On Saturday, catch Confederation Park's Saturday Sessions, running from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m., featuring Triola Trio, Barry Ewan, and Dave Barton. Or join Howe Island's Rockin' the Rock Festival for a full day of live music, including The Box, Goodnight Sunrise, The Brothership, and more. Tickets are $49.50. Over at Gilmore Point, Intero Bing plays a free outdoor set from 1 to 3 p.m. And at the Kingston Yacht Club, Craig Jones and the Alternative Facts perform a charity show at the Easter Seals Summerfest Regatta from 1 to 3 p.m. And Hotel Wolf Island is hosting free sets from Kevin Bowers at 4 p.m. and DePamela at 8:30 p.m. And folks can see the National Youth Orchestra playing at the Isabel at 7:30 p.m. Also on Saturday, Musiki Cafe hosts the Fake Jazz Orchestra from 8 to 11 p.m. with improvisational jazz. The Matt Smith Trio plays Time Out Bar and Bistro from 6 to 9 p.m. with blues rock covers and originals. You can also catch Steve Cheeseman and the Heaters at the Royal Canadian Legion from 8 to midnight for just $25 at the door. And at Tiernan Oak, Echoes closes out the night with alt rock from 9 p.m. to midnight. On Sunday, Georgette Fry and friends play the Broom Factory at 3 p.m. with tickets for $32.50. Finkelshore Park has free music from 2 to 5 with Chris Morris, Sonia Bergen, and Drop Dead Georges. Folks can catch Savannah Shea playing Musiki from 2 to 4 and Jeff Richardson at Time Out Bar and Bistro at 3. And at 3:30 p.m., pay what you can to hear Timothy Loden play waterfront piano at Hotel Wolf Island. And finally, over at Red House Downtown, Chris Koster and his band perform from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and tickets for that are $25. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. And now let's hear about some great community events happening around town this weekend. On Friday, grab a spot in Springer Market Square at 11 a.m. for a chef demo with Miss Bao. Watch a dish come together with local ingredients and enjoy a $2 sample. That evening, Rowena Way hosts Drag Bingo at Carlo Estates Winery from 6 to 9 p.m. It's 19+ and just $10, which goes towards your first drink. Also on Friday at 6 p.m., Springer Market Square offers free line and square dancing lessons. No partner needed, just bring your boots and your best moves. On Saturday, Daft Brewing hosts Sourfest from noon to 8 p.m. Expect live music from Nolan Hubbard, sour beer from 7 breweries, and $15 pizzas for ticket holders. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door and include 2 drink tickets. It's a 19+ event for charity. And finally on Sunday, start your day with Yoga in the Park at Battery Park from 10 to 11 a.m. It's free, just bring your own mat. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., browse local vendors at the Montreal Street Vintage Market between Princess and Queen. Then from noon to 3 p.m., head to Confederation Park for Pull Together for Epilepsy. Teams of 8 will pull a fire truck to raise awareness and funds. Registration opens at 11 a.m., and it's all in support of Epilepsy Southeastern Ontario. Have a local event you would like covered on CFRC's news programming and our website? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Those were the events and concerts that folks can look forward to this weekend. Now coming up, you'll hear a conversation between myself, Ellie Sturton, and Emma McGregor Mitchell, who is the Communications and Program Coordinator at the Tet Center. The Tet Center is an arts hub in Kingston that opened in 2015, so this October, they're celebrating their 10-year anniversary. Emma is heading that project, and she's here to tell us all about it.
Today, I'm here with Emma McGregor Mitchell. We are going to be talking about the TET Center and the upcoming 10-year anniversary of the TET. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
To start off, for people who may not know, can you tell me a little bit about the TET Center and what it's all about?
Yeah, so the TET Center is an arts hub in downtown Kingston. It's actually just right on the waterfront next to the Isabel Bader Center. We house a bunch of different not-for-profit arts organizations, as well as the infamous Juniper Cafe. But the TET Center itself is actually also a charity organization, and we'll be marking our 10th anniversary this year.
So it's a charity organization. What does it support?
Yeah, we offer a lot of arts programming for the community that's at a low cost, sometimes pay what you can, sometimes free. And we also run the actual building itself.
Some of the free programming and pay what you can programming, what have some of those programs been in the past?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So we offer Kids Creativity Club. That's a very big one. So that's for families with children under the age of 10. Once a month, it's usually the first Saturday of every month, those families can come in and get access to essentially like a class of sorts run by a local Kingston artist who kind of teaches them how to make a certain kind of craft. We also have for adults TET Tuesdays, which is a fantastic program in my opinion. It's once a month again, the second Tuesday of every month. Artists of all ages over the age of 18 can kind of come in, collaborate, work on their projects, and then at the end of the year, so usually in the summertime, we actually have an exhibition where we show off all the work that they created while at their TET Tuesday like sessions or just in general throughout that year. And it's an amazing opportunity. The artists like don't pay for that exhibition, don't pay for that programming. It's just kind of by donation, and then they get to exhibit their work. So it's a fantastic opportunity for newer and experienced artists.
Do you have to register for that? Is that something like if you reserve a spot, you're always there on Tuesday or?
So it's awesome. Both those programs are completely drop-in. You can register if you want. You can donate to help support the programs if you wish. Otherwise, if that's not really something you're able to do right now, it's completely fine just to come on in and join the team.
What are some of the businesses and arts organizations within the TET?
Yeah, so some that you might know are Joe's Mill, which is a musical instrument lending library, very well used by the community, as well as the Handloom Weavers and Spinners, the Kingston's Potters Guild, and even Modern Fuel Art Gallery is based in there. So those are all places that when you come and visit the TET Center, you can come on in and check them out and perhaps become a member of some of those organizations.
All right, so over the past 10 years, what impact do you think the TET has had on Kingston and the community?
Yeah, so since opening its doors in 2015, I think it's been quite a cornerstone in the community landscape. We also have, and I didn't mention this previously, but artists that have their studios in our building. So we're just a place where like artists, creatives, community members can come together either through these organizations or just in the TET building itself to connect, learn, create.
A little bit about you. What is your position at the TET Center?
Yeah, so I'm the marketing and communications coordinator. So I'm the person behind the social media, and you can find me at communications@tetcenter.org. I'm often sending out emails to folks. And right now I'm also the project lead of the TET at 10 event, which is happening in October. So if anyone has any questions, you can always reach out to me about that.
How did you find yourself at the TET Center? What drew you in?
I saw that there was an open position for marketing communications, and I had worked previously at Murray Tower Museum, and then I was working at the Ontario Museum Association in Toronto, and I really wanted to kind of go into the arts more, and the team here is just incredibly lovely. Brian Franklin, our director, is just phenomenal, and so I really wanted to join the team and bring my marketing and communication skills kind of with me.
Yeah, I don't really know much about the running of the Tet.
Yeah, so we're a small team and we have quite a small office as well. Right now there's 3 full-time staff. We have a part-time programming and communications coordinator, as well as we're soon to have a summer student and we currently have a placement student. So right now the office is pretty packed, but it's like an incredibly friendly and like creative group of people who just want to make like arts in Kingston so accessible and so much fun for like families, elderly folk, and really anyone who's like interested in just getting involved. It's an amazing workplace.
On the topic of community and arts, coming up is the Tet at 10 Reflections, celebration of the 10-year anniversary of the Tet.
Yeah.
Just to start off, Tet at 10 Reflections. Can you tell me a little bit about that name choice?
Yeah, so it was actually suggested to us by one of our programming subcommittee members. We were kind of trying to figure out how we wanted this event to play out. And, you know, this has been the past 10 years that we're kind of celebrating. And he brought up the idea of reflections in terms of like we're on the water, but also just looking back at the past 10 years and how we've played a role in Kingston's artistic fabric, but also how Kingston's artists have really impacted our organization. And as part of that as well, we recently just wrapped up a call for stories where we asked the community to send in like their experiences, memories, stories at the Tet Center. And so Reflections is kind of born out of celebrating all that stuff, but also even reflecting and trying to sort out what we'd like to see in the future.
So that call for stories, that was an ask from the community to share their stories and connections and memories with the Tet Center. How are those submissions being used to fuel this event?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So we have collected all the stories together and shared them with all the folks who are involved. And they're essentially able to pull from the stories as like points of inspiration for whatever installations, performances, or projects they actually want to bring to the event. So visitors, when they come, can kind of expect to see threads of those stories throughout the entire building and all the art, performance, live installations that are there.
That fits so well with the reflections theme, too, because you're taking the insight from the community and reflecting it back.
Absolutely, art. That's what we really hope to do.
Yeah. Have you been reading any of those submissions?
Yeah, we have. A lot of them have been from people who've been with the organization even before it was founded, like in the building, Potter's Guild members, as well as people from like handloom weavers and spinners who were first there before the construction actually happened. And it's honestly incredible. People really fought to have this building as part of the community. Initially, the city was going to just try to sell it off, but it was actually a community act to try to save it. And so you can really tell that people are super passionate and they really want this building as well as the organization to kind of continue to be a site for creativity.
That's a cool bit of history.
It's amazing.
Do you know what the Tet Center was before?
So it was originally a brewery, like a long, long time ago. It's quite an old building. And then for a while, you had artists kind of using it as their studio, but it was quite unsafe. From what I recall from the stories, people mentioned it having like one bathroom, rickety stairs, lots of spiders, not the best place. So I think the city had decided that they just wanted to sell it, but thankfully that didn't happen.
For anyone who hasn't been inside the Tet, it really is a beautiful building.
Yeah, thank you.
So much art, so much life and personality that breathes in that building. All right, so the celebration of the Tet, what is that event all about? What will that look like?
We want it to be just an incredibly fun time, as well as being kind of a reflection on the past 10 years. So visitors can expect to see like immersive installations. There's going to be live performances as well as hands-on experiences, all kind of organized by ourselves as well as a lot of the organizations that are based in the Tet. You can expect like a bar, place to hang out. It's just going to be really incredible, and it's going to be most of all a tribute to the artists and supporters who have really like shaped the Tet over the past 10 years. We are a nonprofit, so we do accept like donations. I would say most of our donors are people who have been involved in the Tet, either the construction process or they were previously members of like organizations in the past. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know yet, but could you speak to some of the immersive installations and live performances?
Yeah, so we are still kind of in the midst of programming. Some of the stuff that you can expect, I don't know if this is too much spoiler, but some organizations are going to reflect more on kind of their membership. The Tet, you can expect to have a community wall kind of showcasing the different artists that have used the creativity studios in the building throughout the years and really commemorating them and all the incredible work they did.
Still very early
yeah,
in the...
Yeah, still very early. Mm-hmm. But community members can expect a really good time.
Yeah, when can people expect to see tickets go on sale? Is it a ticketed event, first
it
of all?
It is a ticketed event. This celebration is also kind of a little bit of a fundraiser event. We hope that we're able to use this money to continue with our free and accessible programming. Tickets, ideally, are going on sale July 30th, so very soon.
And the event itself is in October.
Yes, October 4th.
What do you hope people will take away from this event?
I hope community members, supporters of the Tet, donors, can all attend and really see the incredible impact they've had on the Kingston artistic community, as well as just have an amazing time kind of celebrating the past 10 years, looking forward to the future, having connections, and just experiencing all the amazing things at the Tet Center.
And then this is just a broad arts question, but mm-hmm. why do you think that arts are important, like as a part of life, to bring into the community?
I think that the arts is one of the best ways to connect with other people and also learn more about yourself. So I think that what the Tet does is just allow people the space and the tools to actually do that when sometimes art isn't as accessible as people perhaps think it is initially.
Is mm-hmm. there anything else that you'd like to share about the Tet, the celebration?
Obviously, we would love for everyone who can come to attend the event. It is going to be a 19-plus event just because of the bar being there.
Oh, that's something I wanted to ask. Yeah. Will it be all throughout the Tet? Like, where
yes.
will the event
yeah.
take place?
So most of the event is kind of, the main spot is going to be in Malting Tower, which is our beautiful, huge, on-the-lake rental space, if you've ever been inside. But throughout the building, there should be performances, interactive displays, and the hands-on activities, as well as live music.
How is the planning behind the scenes process going for this big, big event?
Yeah, for me personally, it's been like an incredible learning experience. I've never, I guess professional development-wise, it's very new. I think it's going quite well. We have a great team behind us, and the arts organizations in the building are really willing to be collaborative on this event. They're also as excited as we are to celebrate the past 10 years. So it's been going well, and I can't wait to see what the result is.
Well, I learned a lot.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Emma McGregor Mitchell from the Tet Center talking about the Tet's 10-year anniversary. Now, our next feature on today's show is the Kingston Canadian Film Festival's Best of the Fest event. And now to learn a bit about the Kingston film scene. Just last night, the Kingston Canadian Film Festival held their Best of the Fest event at the Broom Factory. Community members, organizers, and filmmakers came together to watch a screening of some of the best short films from the 2025 Kingston Canadian Film Festival. Just before the screening began, I sat down with Mark Garnis, the executive director of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, to hear his thoughts and reflections on the past festival season.
So our festival takes place every year in the winter, and this past year was our 25th anniversary. So it was a really busy festival, and compared to the ones from the previous 4 years, it was just a bit busier too. With like, I know it sounds weird to still be talking about the pandemic, but a lot of festivals, I think, still are trying to recover their audiences to pre-pandemic levels. So for us, it was really busy, and it felt more like 2018 and 2019 when like, things were really full tilt.
The festival itself ran February to March 2025. However, KCFF is busy year-round.
We work in the Broom Factory, and it's also a venue that we use for programming as well. So we have 3 year-round programs, and they all run out of here. So we have one for kids, we have one for documentary filmmakers, and then we have one for musicians and filmmakers that are creating music videos together. So that stuff happens year-round.
One of the directors from their documentary program was there last night, having won the KCFF Doc Factory Award for his short film, Dust in the Gates.
I'm Alan Code. I'm director of Dust in the Gate that won the Doc Factory Award for the Kingston Canadian Film Festival for 2025. My film is an experimental documentary about downtown Kingston that I shot in not a typical process. It was made up of single frames, shot still frames on a old DSLR camera that would do a rapid shutter. So it'll do about maybe 4 or 5 frames a second until the buffer fills up. So kind of like clack, 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 clack. And then some of that stuff ended up being time lapse. That's kind of looks linear because the frame doesn't move. And some of that was just kind of, it's kind of my love story to downtown Kingston.
Alan Code shared the behind the scenes process of making his experimental documentary through KCFF.
My treatment was to explore the juxtaposition of sounds and sights in urban areas. Part of my process, because I'm shooting in this sort of atypical style with this loud camera, I couldn't record sound at the same time. So I would go out into the spaces and shoot all the footage, which I'd have to process later, and then I would go back to those same locations later and record the sounds of those spaces. I was part of the first round of workshops that the Kingston Canadian Film Festival has put on called Doc Factory, and I think there were 10 people, and everybody came in with a documentary idea, and then we learned about the history of documentary, different styles of documentary, and then workshopped all of our documentaries together over about 10 months.
I asked Alan how he felt about the KCFF Best of the Fest event and seeing his film screened once again.
Tonight is great. I've actually not seen any of the other films that are playing tonight. My film screened with all of the other Doc Factory films, but tonight I've not seen any one of these films, and they're all the ones that won in those categories. So I'm really excited to see all those.
Executive Director Mark Garnes had a similar sentiment towards the night.
Feels like for us, because we saw all these films like a long time ago now, but when people come to the festival, the way it's arranged is you have to pick and choose what you want to go to, so you can't possibly see everything. So the nice thing with a lot of the short films is they don't necessarily end up on Crave or Netflix after. Like, sometimes short films, the festival run is really where they make their mark, and then sometimes it's really hard to find them. Like, maybe they'll go to YouTube or something like that. But so even for us, it feels a little bit late to be playing some of these. A lot of people still haven't seen any of them. So I think it's just nice to see a second wind kind of for these films, and the filmmakers that are going to be here, I think, are getting excited that people are seeing them for the first time still.
In order to make screenings like this possible, KCFF has built an incredible board full of experts from the film industry.
I'm Sheena McDonald, and I'm on the board of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival for 2 years now. And I love this festival. I love KCFF and what it does. I was in film and television in Toronto for 40 some odd years. For 20 years, I was a partner in a company called Rhombus Media, which was a sort of high-end producer, distributor. I did most of the foreign sales and work that way. We did a lot of arts films, but we did some feature films, and we did a TV series called Slings and Arrows. And so we were branching out more in the arts, sort of arts and art house cinema, but it's still going. Rhombus is still going. It did the film Black Mary recently with Jay Baruchel that was here at the festival.
Sheena spoke on why film means so much to her and why events like these are so important for a community.
There's something about a communal experience of watching films as a community or as a small group or whatever it is. And it's just a wonderful expressive art form, really, and storytelling is in our DNA, and it's visual and odd, you know, it's just an exciting medium Yeah. And now I think it's so much expanded than what it used to be because there's so much filmic work on television. Like it used to be that television was kind of formulaic looking and sounding and the whole thing. But I think that the way film is, like feature films, is now permeating into the small screen.
Part of Sheena's role as a board member of KCFF is to raise funds for the organization. KCFF is supported by various sponsors in the community and was grateful to have them in attendance last night.
I'm thrilled to be a sponsor of KCFF. Well, for many different reasons. One, there are so many movies that you want to go see. So I'm proud to be associated with the festival. And it's local, and I want to support them any way I can. What's wonderful about it is there's so many films that you probably would never see, and it gives you an opportunity because it's a whole week, you know, or not full, like 5 days, but you just book all these films, so and it's just so exciting. And then I think also the other bonus is you see some films that go on to, it might be a premiere, and then all of a sudden you've seen that film before everyone else has as well. And again, it's all Canadian. So like that's where we sometimes miss seeing Canadian films.
It's clear that this local film festival is beloved by the community. And in the Broom Factory, the audience was buzzing. Just before the screening, Mark introduced each of the amazing Canadian films being shown.
My name is Mark Garnas. I'm the executive director of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival. As you can see, we're not in a movie theater. It's a bit more of a casual setting, not raked seating. So if you do need to move around, nobody will be offended. If there's somebody really tall in front of you, you need to reposition your chair. So if you don't know why you're here to see the best of the fest. So these are not the best feature films, or we would be here till tomorrow, but they're some of the best short films from the festival. So really quickly, I don't know if I'm going to get these in the right order, but we're going to start off with a couple of the youth films. So all of these films won an award at the festival. The first one I think that we're going to see will be called Last Stop by Saif Amer, and it won for the 18mm program, which is our year-round filmmaking program for youth. Then the best youth short film is by Anki Guo, which is called Isn't Even Roses. And then what we have a couple music videos as well. So we have a program called the Slate Music Video Program, which is sponsored by the Slate Family Foundation. It's one of the most exciting programs at the festival. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it happens at the Grand Theater, and it feels like you're at a rock show. It's like really good energy to the room, and we have some of the best bands from Kingston that are part of it. So the two winners from this past year were Almond Milk and Yeah Know For Sure Productions for The Curse Is Gone, so we'll see that. And then probably a band that you're familiar with, Casador. They made a video for their song Revolution, and the production company was Little Menace. And then we will see, so we also have a documentary program that's year-round at the festival too. So right now in that program, they're actually making the movies for the next festival. So from the previous iteration, the winner was Alan Code for a film called Dust in the Gates. And then moving into towards the end of the program, we'll see a film called Fantas by Halima El Khattabi, and it's in the Canadian Shorts program. So these are films that have been on the festival circuit and played. I think Halima's film toured all over the UK and other parts of Europe and down in the States and has done very well in the festival circuit. So it also won at our festival. And then finally, we will play Single Woman Seeking Child. We'll play that at the end. And so this film won our 25 years, 25 minutes pitch competition. We had a number of filmmakers that all pitched their idea for a movie on this stage right here. And we had some judges that awarded Blaine Waters as the winner of that competition. So Blaine went on to make a film called Single Woman Seeking Child, which was shot right here in Kingston. I think KCFF has become more of a year-round organization in Kingston. And it's a really exciting festival to work for, and I'm glad to see so many of you here and to have so many of our supporters here as well. So thank you very much. Enjoy the film.
As mentioned, Single Woman Seeking Child is a short film directed by Blaine Waters. The film is inspired by the real-life experiences of Waters' mother and is set in Kingston, Ontario in the early 1980s.
It tells the story of Sandy, a woman who defies the conservative norms of the time by pursuing motherhood on her own. Mark Garnes mentioned that it was his favorite film from the entire festival.
It's funny, but it's heartwarming too. But anyways, we 2 years ago had a pitch competition at the festival, and we awarded $25,000 to the best pitch, and with the intention that they would go forward and make a short film with that money. And so Blaine won that competition. And if you look at Blaine's IMBD or filmography, he's done a lot of like really cool films, but it was not, I don't know, it was just felt extra special to us that he made it for the festival and that it premiered at the festival.
Blaine's film was a huge hit at the event, and at the end of the night, the audience was surprised with a Q&A featuring Blaine himself and his mother, Sandy Waters. We got to hear all about the behind-the-scenes process and about his mother's story.
The director, writer, and director of the film, Blaine Waters. Thank you. Blaine, you've been writing screenplays, feature films, television shows. You teach screenwriting. But you don't direct that much.
No, this is my first kind of time directing. Yeah, on my own. I've directed, like, co-directed with someone, but this is the first thing I've done on my own.
Wow,
yeah.
That's fantastic work.
And it was a true story, and it was about this woman right here. So this is my mom.
There wasn't a lot of positivity back then to a single woman wanting to have insemination. Like when I was brought across the street from the hospital and went into my GP's office through the back door to have the insemination.
Well, that's an incredible story.
Sandy Waters kept a journal in the 1980s, and it was used as a key source of inspiration for the filmmaker.
You made a journal at the time, and so you wrote it all down right after it happened, the day it happened. And so there's kind of verbatim conversation that you wrote down that I have put in here. So sometimes it wasn't even screenwriting, it was just transcribing.
Wow. Audience members asked Sandy about her experience outlined in the film and why she chose to pursue motherhood.
I just really, really want to have a baby. And I want to bring someone else into the world and care for them. So at that point, it was harder to adopt back then being single.
The audience was also curious about Blaine's filmmaking process and the film shooting that happened in Kingston.
I wrote the feature when I was having my child. And we were having troubles and we were using science. And I was like, this is hard and they're helping us. Like they're not standing in the way. And it's super hard. And, my mom did this alone with everyone like standing in her way. Like how? Anyway. So I was like, I want to ask that question. And then you were like, I got journals. I was like, you got receipts? And then I got them and I was like, this is so much better than, I wrote the whole screenplay and then I got the journals and I was like, that screenplay sucks. This is so much better. I just like everything that could go wrong went wrong. My whole production team was also working on a feature at the same time and something happened on the feature, so they had to like leave. So it was just like we were on our own for a little bit, and that was a little scary, but they were like so dedicated.
Blaine complimented the film crews of Kingston, saying they are truly some of the best people to work with. All in all, the night was a huge success for the Kingston film community. And that's all for this week's installation of The Kingston Curator. I'm your host, Ellie Sturton, and you can catch me each week Friday at 3 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.